with the emphasis on you. News Radio 890, 92.5 and 106.1 KDXU. I'm Dale Desmond. All right, we've got the next little bit. We're going to be talking about Elder Holland passing away over the weekend, the age of 85. And we'll talk about that, about his contact, I guess, with people. And, you know, being a St. George native, and how long after he had moved, you know, on to different things in his life and his career and in his work with the church, still definitely had a lot of interaction here in St. George. So throughout the show, throughout the hour, I would love to hear from you guys. You can call up 673-5890, 673-5890. Thoughts, anecdotes, things, maybe interactions you've had with Elder Holland, with his family. You can call up 673-5890, 673-5890 throughout the hour here. I'd love to hear from you guys in interactions you've had. Maybe your family knows his family or somehow interacted. Maybe it's direct contact. I know my stepdad knew him well, and we'll get into that in just a little bit as well. Even though I didn't grow up here, he didn't grow up here, but influenced for sure. So I'd love to hear what you guys, your thoughts, your influence from Elder Holland, passed away over the weekend at the age of 85. You can also text in if you're busy doing stuff, not able to call in. Our new text line, program this on your phone, 435-261-4540, 435-261-4540. Elder Holland, of course, over the weekend, born here, born in Southern Utah, born in St. George, on December 3rd. He just celebrated a birthday a few weeks ago, back in 1940. Right here, his parents grew up or spent some time here. He was born here as a youth. Elder Holland worked as a newspaper. He delivered newspapers. He was bagged groceries here in town. Even worked as a service station attendant for a little bit. I would love to hear from some of you guys if you know some of the details in these stories. I know that people listening have incredible details about things that don't make it into the headlines, that don't make it into the news releases, that don't maybe it doesn't make it into biographies. But working as the service station, I'd love to know where he worked and which service station and where it's at and what it is now. As a young man, Elder Holland served in what was then known as the British Mission. Interestingly enough, his mission president was Marion D. Hanks, and him and Quentin L. Cook, also an apostle, were companions for a little bit. My stepdad was also in that mission, served around them way back in the 60s. The early 60s, and they used to go. So when they would go on their missions, when people back in the day when missionaries would going to England, you would take a train or maybe fly to New York City, and you'd get on the Queen Elizabeth, and they all traveled to and from to England on the Queen Elizabeth II, I think it was, back and forth across the Atlantic several days. Getting back and forth in the early 60s. That's how they got back and forth, served his mission there. Elder Holland, he graduated from Dixie High School in 1959, helped the Flyers capture state high school championships in football and in basketball. Is that hard? Maybe if you're listening, maybe you've been around, you know the histories, you remember the stories, seen the pictures, maybe even experienced and been there and seen it happen back in the day when Elder Holland was a football and a basketball star for Dixie High School way back in the day. Yeah, kept it right here local. He helped the Flyers. He's one of the alum. He began his college education at Dixie College before his mission, and then came back and served as a captain of the Dixie basketball team. Pretty cool. I like that. I like thinking that, you know, him running around in these, you know, with the I in my mind, you can see him running around the short shorts and the high tops. I just have a hard time seeing Elder Holland running up and down the court. I mean, I remember he got called as an apostle when I was in high school, and thinking, man, he's got kind of droopy cheeks, like Droopy from the cartoons back in the day. It was interesting. In 2011, the school broke ground on the Jeffrey R. Holland Centennial Commons building. And that was all before this all, you know, being a member of the basketball team at Dixie College before he transferred to BYU to further his education. If you guys have interaction thoughts, people have met Elder Holland. You have family that interact. I'd love to hear from you. Phone lines are open. 673-5890, 673-5890. Let's get to the phones right now. Phone lines are open. Good morning. You're on the air. Who's this?
This is Barbara.
Hi, Barbara. How are you this morning?
I am great. How are you?
Let me check. Oh, I'm good. I was checking there for a second. Barbara, talk about some of your thoughts on an Elder Holland and some of that interaction.
Okay, several things. First of all, when my brother died, Elder Holland was on his mission, and he sent a personal letter to my parents, and you could tell he was destined for great things. That letter was amazing. My parents kept it, and we still have it in our family, and have made copies and given to our family members.
You said Elder Holland was destined for great things, or your brother was?
No. Oh. Well, my brother was great, too.
I thought so. I figured. If he's your brother, he has to be.
Yeah. And so they play basketball together, my brother and Elder Holland played basketball together. So they have a longstanding friendship and relationship and stuff. Elder Holland's mother, Alice, was a patient of my husband, and so he saw her on a regular basis, and she was adorable. And she said, yeah, Elder Holland was a normal kid. He was a normal kid growing up. And
well, normal by whose standards? Because normal by my standards would have been not destined for greatness.
I'm sure he did pranks and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sure my husband talked with Alice about that many times and stuff. And she was so sweet. She loved to make pomegranate jelly.
Yes.
And she would share that with us. And she also crocheted. Do you know how you have the little towels that you put like by your oven?
Yeah.
She would cut little towels, and then she would crochet this little thing that would have a button on it, and you would clamp it over the top and button it on to your, and she gave us multiple ones of those. I still have
I love that.
A bunch of those. anyway, he's a great guy and a wonderful man, and loved his talks, loved his stories.
Yeah.
He just was so relatable to so many people, touched so many hearts, and just, a good guy.
Yeah.
Missed his wife terribly, and I think he just was so happy to be able to go back and be with her.
I'm sure.
Anyway,
Barbara.
We have a lot of kind of connections with him, and he will be greatly missed.
For sure. I know at least in my family, General Conference comes up and everybody sits up and notes get taken when Elder Holland would begin to talk. There was like a little fist pump sometimes when it would be announced that he'd be speaking in this, in certain, here it comes.
And did you ever hear? I heard, this is just a hearsay kind of, but nobody wanted to follow him.
Oh!
Because he was so great.
Yeah.
His talks were so amazing that a lot of the general authority, we have to follow Jeffrey R. Holland.
Well, I'm sure.
We can't top him.
So. I'm sure. Oh, you know what I always liked? I remember there was what did they call that? The face-to-face that they did several years ago with Elder Eyring. President Eyring and Elder Holland at the Sacred Grove. Now, Barbara, I grew up there. I grew up in Western New York before I moved out west.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
cool.
I grew up about 30 miles from Palmyra my whole, you know, growing up years.
Oh,
and,
amazing.
Yeah, and so watching that that face-to-face, my kids watching it was really cool. And seeing the how often they would touch each other's hands and the I'll say affection, but the adoration, the love that Elder Holland had for Elder Eyring back and forth, you could see it. It was visible right there. Mm-hmm. And watching. Yeah. I remember that was one of my standout moments. So, Barbara,
well, you were so lucky to grow up back there. Oh my goodness.
Yeah,
we've
yeah.
been there and loved it. Yeah. One time we went to the Sacred Grove and we just wanted to meditate and just feel the spirit and just really enjoy being there. And there were so many mosquitoes that they drove us out. I mean, my daughter was getting eaten up by the mosquitoes in that at that time. You know, it was just probably that time of year.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know. It was crazy.
It's
so we
crazy.
Didn't get to stay near as long as we would have liked to have.
Well,
anyway.
Yeah. Well, Barbara, thank you so much. Sorry the mosquitoes bugged you, but thank you for sharing your thoughts on Elder Holland. Thank you for calling in. Lines are open. 435-673-5890. 435-673-5890 is the number to call up. And you can talk about Elder Holland if you had some interaction. Maybe you know somebody. Maybe some of your family had some interaction with him. We'd love to hear your thoughts. You can also text in if you're not able to call. 435-261-4540, the text line. Program that one into your phone. 435-261-4540. You can also, again, that call in line that Barbara just called on, 673-5890, here with News Radio 890 KDXU, and remembering the life, the Southern Utah connection as a native to Southern Utah. Dixie Flyer, former Dixie. I'm trying to remember. I have to go back and look. What was the mascot way back? Were they still the Rebels back when Dixie College, back in the late 50s, early 60s? What was the mascot back then? If some local historians know that really, really well. I'd have to go back and dig to know. I know he was a Dixie Flyer. Elder Holland was a Dixie Flyer in high school. Went right to Dixie College down the street. I know there's lots of local historians here that know all of the cool little details that we would love to hear about. Elder Holland, when he transferred from Dixie College to BYU, graduated with a bachelor's in English. He did graduate study in religious education. He became an Institute of Religion teacher in California. As I moved around to expand, spent a lot of time as a teacher. He spent time, actually, he then studied American Studies at Yale, where he received his second master's and a PhD in 1972. And while there, Elder Holland studied with American literary scholar and critic R.W.B. Lewis, authored a dissertation on religious sense of Mark Twain. He knew a lot of stuff. He was an instructor at the Church's Institute there at Yale while a student. So he was not only a student, but also teaching institute there back east. While studying at Yale, he served as counselor in the presidency, in the stake presidency there. Then he arose through the ranks of CES and spent time not only in, as president of BYU eventually, and was called as president of president of BYU. I'm sure a lot of you listening were at BYU while he was at BYU and what that was like, knowing seeing him at the different, you know, on Tuesdays, and then going on and him ascending to being into the apostleship. What that was like, going, gosh, I used to run into him on campus all the time, or he used to stop by our club and whatever. It'd be interesting to hear some of those thoughts. You can call us up. Phone lines are open. Your thoughts as a native to Southern Utah, to St. George, Elder Holland passing away over the weekend. 673-5890, 673-5890. You can also text in your thoughts to 435-261-4540. My stepdad talked about going on his mission, going and serving his mission and traveling back to and back from England. They both served in the same mission, and traveling on the Queen Elizabeth, the ship, many days across the Atlantic with Elder Holland, as well as with Elder Cook. They all served, my stepdad, with those guys in their missions way back in the early 60s. And just some of those cool stories as one of those things you like don't even think about. When you're a little kid, you're like, okay, great. And then as time goes on, you don't understand the significance of it until you're like, gosh, I wish I would have, you know, squeezed my stepdad for some more details. You know what I'm saying? But served as apostle, called as an apostle in 1994, and served there as the apostle until becoming chief apostle just not long ago, just in September. He's been a couple of months after President Nelson died. So if you have any anecdotes, we're going to have the phone lines open for this for a few more minutes here. If you have any anecdotes, personal experience, personal interaction with Elder Holland, we'd love to hear it. 673-5890. The phone lines are open for a little bit longer. 673-5890. I know he's got several buildings with his name on it here in Dixie High School as well as Utah Tech. And I know a lot of people are up in arms about that, about it being switched to Utah Tech and saying, well, that's not what Elder Holland signed up for. He signed up to have it to be a member of Dixie State or a Dixie State University. So some thoughts there. I'm sure a lot of you have on that interaction there. So I would love to know where Elder Holland bagged groceries, where he worked, you know, as a service station attendant, checking oil, just being a regular kid right here in Southern Utah. And referenced it a lot in his speeches. In fact, I remember one of his talks, he talked about being on that cliff where he told his brother to back up so that he could fall and his brother wouldn't experience it. And his brother was right there the whole time and caught his hand because his brother knew what he was going to do. I'm not sure where exactly that happened. I don't think in that talk he talked about where in Southern Utah. I'm assuming it was in Southern Utah. It sounds like something that would happen here. Maybe hit the Sugar Loaf, or maybe in Snow Canyon. Not sure, but definitely a lasting impression. That speech left on a lot of people. That talk left on a lot of people. So as we remember the life and the history of Elder Holland here in Southern Utah, being a St. George native. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts on it, checking the text line. You can always text in those lines. That line's open, 435-261-4540. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back on the backside talking about Tyler Robinson back in court today. He's going to have some, the judge is going to rule on a couple of things that could relate to how much interaction, how much we are going to see inside of the courtroom for the Tyler Robinson trial as we get to it. As the trial gets ready to gear up, they're still going through all the preliminaries, but they're going to rule today on if or if not there's going to be cameras in the courtroom for Tyler Robinson's trial coming up. We'll take up a couple of more calls on the backside about Elder Holland. If you have them, 435-673-5890. KDXU News Time, 9:26. KDXU News Time, 9:32. Good morning, everybody. This is Southern U Talk with Dale Desmond. Beautiful sunrise, beautiful morning here in Southern Utah. Talking, thinking about, and remembering Elder Holland, St. George native, grew up here, spent some time before, kind of moving on, went to Yale eventually, spent time as a Yale Bulldog, which I remember being in high school and seeing him get called to be an apostle. I thought, he kind of looks like a bulldog. His droopy cheeks looks like. Remember Droopy from the cartoons? And I kind of one of those thoughts I kind of had in my head. I had to keep it in my head until now. We've got calls coming in. You can call up if you have any thoughts, interactive anecdotes from Elder Holland, 673-5890, 673-5890. We got Ann on the phone from St. George. Ann, Miss Ann, good morning. How are you? What do you got?
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
So
I met Elder Holland several years back when I was living up in the Avenues in Salt Lake. And he was there introducing, you know, after a sacrament meeting because he sat up front. And I went to go meet him. And I had my aunt with me. And she wanted to know if I was okay. I don't know why, because I think I'd seen him before. And I gave my aunt kind of the spotlight on that one. And he kind of looked around her and looked at me and asked if I was okay. And I saw he had a pop blood vessel in his eye. And I got one as a teenager when a girl hit me in the eye. So I was thinking, are you okay?
Yeah.
But when I looked in his eyes, this is what really, really touched me. When I looked in his eyes, I knew he knew the Savior. I knew that he knows the Savior, like so directly. And that just has impressed me through every trial. When I remember those moments, the energy when people are, you know, oppressive and just I don't even have the words for, you know, some of the behaviors where people attack other people. And I go to those moments and everything else melts away. And I remember that feeling and literally feeling connected as if I was looking at the Savior. Like,
He
knows the Savior.
Yeah.
And that is most important, like, for me, that has been, it has been a life changer for all kinds of things. So I just wanted to, say that.
That's fantastic. And when did that happen? How many years ago?
I have a concussion for Caxton. I can't remember the year. But it was probably close to, maybe 20 years ago.
Okay.
It was a while back.
Yeah. So it wasn't
carried me through a lot.
Yeah. So it wasn't it wasn't a couple of weeks ago anyway. It's something that's carried you through decades.
100%.
Yeah, decades through that's good powerful. Times and through bad, right?
I remember it more, of course. Well, either in a very just quiet, peaceful moment, but when you know, someone's in my face trying to, whatever they're yelling at me for. And then when I step away and whatever, I just kind of look at them. I don't even know how to react. I just kind of go in these freezing moments.
Yeah.
When I step away and then I feel flooded and I'll have those moments. Or when somebody mentions Elder Holland, I am immediately brought to that moment. And my whole self just is like, it's okay. This is the strength. This is, this is the power of life. And
it's
that's what I gained from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and I think we all, and I know Elder Holland wants and wanted and talked about it, about, you know, having your own witness of life, but being a witness of truth and what you feel is right. And I think he's done a you know, a good job at inspiring others to come along. And I wonder how many other people have met somebody where you look them in the eye and you know that person knows. And they know.
Yeah. And it's amazing. It's that union and connection is like, it's infused. And that's like when people talk about like a blank piece of paper and you put a dot on it and it's pencil and you try to erase it, you can't.
Yeah.
That's the atonement. That's the connection. And when you have that connection, that connection is always with you.
Was that?
And that's what I gained.
Was that interaction with him? Was that here in Southern Utah? Was it here in St. George? Or was it up
that
in the
Avenues? The Avenues in Salt Lake. Yeah, the chapel. He was attending, and he was there, and he was greeting people. And my aunt had come with me, and so and I've sat on the bench with Sister Holland, and we had a fun conversation. But so he had people meeting and greeting, and I was walking with her, and I've met him generally, and since I interacted and saw him and with my mission and different things, that I don't remember the very first time I met him, because that moment I remember, because it was just in such a close connection.
It's a pivotal moment.
I'm right there, literally. Yeah, and he's reaching out to me kind of around my aunt to know if I'm okay. So whatever he saw, I don't know what he perceived, but it was enough that he connected. So it,
So that
even if it was just like I'm supposed to meet him, so I could have that moment. It was, I mean, the Savior knows, right? The Spirit knows, and so he follows, and he followed that, and he was so balanced in humor and directness and life and playfulness, and the importance of life.
Absolutely, yeah.
So
you never,
he's a real sincere person.
Yeah, you never had to guess what he felt or what he believed. Mm-hmm. It was pretty cool, And thank you so much for calling, for sharing that with us today.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
You bet, man. Thanks, Anne, for calling up. Lines are open for a few more minutes. 673-5890, 673-5890. Got a text, says, my wife was eating lunch with her coworkers at a local restaurant in St. George. President Holland came in and said the room went very quiet and peaceful because everyone knew who he was, and it was nice. Quiet lunch after we arrived. It's almost like there's like this hush falls over the crowd, right? I'm curious if that happened a lot or if it was, you know, I remember being at a BYU-Gonzaga game and President Nelson was there and he waved everybody and it was not quiet at that game. it was not peaceful back then. He also says, this other text came in and said, I think it was after he got out of the hospital when he had the time where he almost passed away. I'm not 100% positive, but I think it was in the last year that this happened, where he was here locally at a local restaurant and people, just a hush fell over the crowd here. So, by the way, funeral plans, if you've not heard, Wednesday, 11 a.m., it'll be happening in the Tabernacle. Which kind of, does that surprise you that they're having it in the Tabernacle and not in the conference center? I thought it would be way more well attended. Maybe if it was on a Saturday, perhaps it would be, kind of wall to wall, but maybe midday on a Wednesday. But it is New Year's Eve, right? I mean, isn't that, that's Wednesday is New Year's Eve. So it'll be New Year's Eve day at 11 a.m. At the Tabernacle. It'll be on the church's website, streamed in a bunch of different languages. It'll be on YouTube as well, a bunch of different languages for you, for whomever wants to watch funeral of Jeffrey R. Holland, who passed away over the weekend. Kidney issues is what they're saying is he went into the hospital on New Year's Eve and passed away not long after due to kidney failure. Kidney failure and complications to kidney disease. So he's left a deep impression on Ann, on many others that have called, that have texted in today. And, man, thank you guys for sharing your thoughts with us throughout the show. We'd love to hear more on that. You can text in. We're going to take a quick break and come back. Charlie Kirk, Tyler Robinson, accused of assassinating Charlie Kirk, going to be in court today with a judge ruling, I believe, top of the hour here, going over the ruling on whether or not media will be able to be a part of the proceedings. There's thoughts on a lot of sides on this. If you guys have thoughts, should there be media in the courtroom, Tyler Robinson's trial and proceedings leading up to it, yes or no, 673-5890, 673-5890. You can text in to 435-261-4540. We're coming back on the backside. Some more of your thoughts on that. KDXU News Time, 642. KDXU News Time, 944. This is Southern U Talk. With me, Dale Desmond. Thank you guys for joining us this morning. I know this is a weird week between Christmas and New Year's. I don't know which way is up or down. I don't know what day it is. I woke up today. I was like, is it Sun? No, it's not Sunday. It's got to be. It's got to be Monday, right? I'm just saying. Like, it throws me off. This week, everybody's kind of checked out in different varying stages of checked in. We're going to have New Year's Eve on Wednesday. We've got New Year's Day Friday. And then there's this kind of hanging weird day on Friday. You're going to work. You're not. You're going to be here. You're not going to be here. And then you're, next thing you know, you're on Monday the 5th. And the month is, you know, almost a quarter over in just like that. So it's a weird week. It's a weird couple of days here between Christmas and New Year's, but we'll get you through there. Don't you worry. New thing popping up this morning that Charlie Kirk's accused assassin, Tyler Robinson, back in court today. He actually won't be in court. He'll be joining via a voice call, listening in. He won't actually be in court, but the judge in the case is expected to rule on media access. Prosecutors and the defense team both want cameras banned from hearings, not just the trial itself, but in the all of the lead up to it as well. We've had cameras in the courtroom previously. I think the world changed during the OJ trial, and you can debate whether or not it influenced the outcome or not. We could debate that till the end of time. There's a lot that goes into that. But do you guys think, and you can text me, you can call in right now, 673, a couple of lines are open, 5890, 673-5890. Should cameras be allowed in Tyler Robinson's courtroom trial? Should Tyler Robinson, should the trial be televised? Should they allow cameras? Or are we going to have to just rely on, you know, visual artists using the weird drawings that have been, you know, we've seen on the news for years and years? Should they allow cameras in the courtroom? Erica Kirk, for what it's worth, wants cameras in the courtroom for the trial. She wants them there. She wants to have it televised because she wants to make sure that everything is public, wants to make sure everything, nothing gets missed. There's a lot of thought about multiple people helping out Tyler Robinson in the assassination of Charlie Kirk. How did he get there? How did he get up on the roof? How did he get out of there? How did he hide? How did he get back in all the movements? How did he get home? Did he drive himself back to St. George? What went down there? So I'd love to hear from you guys. What do you think? You can text me. Tell me your thoughts. 435-261-4540. I'm curious. Do you guys want cameras in the courtroom or not? I'm just wondering, is it something where you feel like something's going to get missed? It's public knowledge. It should be. If I was in person, if I was able to drive to Orem and spend time there, I would be in the courtroom. Maybe family or friends of Tyler or acquaintances, maybe whatever. I'm curious. I think they should. I think they should allow it. I don't know what difference it makes. It's all public record. It's all things that, nothing should be hidden anyway. I do think they should have cameras in the courtrooms. I think everything should be on camera in a courtroom. I know they've got a closed circuit. They're recording it. So why not? Is it to keep lawyers from, you know, peacocking around, posturizing, and making it about them like we saw in the OJ trial? Is that what I'm wondering why people don't want to see it? Because they want it to be about the evidence and not about the spectacle like the OJ trial became? Because I it's all going to be public record anyway. I say, why not? 435-673-5890. 435-673-5890. Let's jump on the phones. Good morning. You're on the air. Who's this?
It's Richard.
Richard, what do you think? What are your thoughts on a couple of different things we're talking about today?
I'm kind of mixed, but I want to see cameras, I think, so we get the full picture of it. Don't want to see his smirking face, and I'd love to see him in an orange jumpsuit with shackles on like a murderer he should be treated like. And also, I like to get to the bottom of the security. Everybody admits it was lapped, you know. Why didn't they just fly a drone or two? They could have solved the whole thing, you know, but.
How do you mean? You flying a drone, how so?
Over the crowd, over the buildings.
You mean as far as security? Yeah. Like if they had a security drone hanging out over the top, then it would have.
Something like that on an open venue, you know, that's pretty standard. Well, they missed that with Trump, too, and about got him killed.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm curious. Anyway, I'm curious about that. If that makes people nervous, you know, there's a drone flying over. Who knows who's flying it, right? I mean, but I do like the idea, Richard. I do think we ought to see that more often, more drones for security.
Put some blinking red and blue lights on it, you know, then we know it's a cop.
Yeah, but well, for sure, and that would be interesting to be able to identify a police drone. But at least make announcements. Hey, this is a security drone. You know, nothing
to top. You know,
yeah, keeping an eye in the sky.
That's exactly in this day and age. That's should be standard security nowadays. But anyway,
I like it, Richard. Thanks for your call, buddy.
Man. No,
thanks, Richard. You can calls are open. Phone lines are open for a few more minutes here for the top of the hour. We're going to squeeze in a couple more calls if we can. 673-5890, 673-5890. Should we or should we not have cameras in the courtroom? Tyler Robertson, as he's on trial for the murder assassination of Charlie Kirk, got a text that says cameras should absolutely be allowed in the courtroom. Lisa says, I agree with Erica that Charlie's death was televised and public, and all facts should be public, too. Let's get back to the phones. Good morning. You're on the air. Who's this?
Hi, this is Ann.
Ann, what do you think?
How are you?
I'm good. I am awesome. So, and good morning. What do you think?
Great. I was a block away when it occurred.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So there's a lot right behind that. Here's my question. UVU, there's a camera on the corner of every building.
Yep.
Where were the cameras? How did he get on the roof, like you'd mentioned earlier? How does this even happen? I don't understand how any of this got set up, how he was able to take, in this perfect situation, to take one shot and the whole thing was quote-unquote perfect to and from. There's a lot of questions I have for that. I 100% believe they should be doing this. Real time, we're all not going to have time to sit and go through all the little documents and all the words and retrieve those from the city, et cetera. But this is a real time. It happened in public. It should be a public trial, very public. I do think there should be a lot of security so this doesn't become about the media, but becomes and focuses on his assassinator and this, you know, Tyler and then Charlie and that whole everything. Because there's a lot of questions how anyone can pull something off like this, be on the roof the way he was. You don't just get on the roof.
Right.
And all of those cameras, how did that happen? How did he get set up and then how could he escape without drones or no drones? We wouldn't need drones. There's cameras on every corner.
Right.
So where is that? Yeah, he's a well-known person and publicly there. So,
I would not be surprised if we start seeing more drones and more security. I mean, with the attempted assassination of President Trump at least once, mm-hmm. probably twice, once again in Florida, I wouldn't be surprised to see more drones. Is that disconcerting to you if you're at this rally and there's a drone hanging out overhead? Is that comfort or is that disconcerting, do you think?
To me, I'm not a big drone fan. My first exposure is when I was working on an employment application and someone's drone came up to my window. So they got exposure to my whole social security number, everything falls apart. I called the police and the police were like, oh, it's not illegal. It is illegal if they're stalking and they just violated my space, right?
Yeah.
So drones, there are some real estate rules as well for property, but nobody's following them. So I'm kind of mixed on that because I know they have the purpose. I love drone shows instead of fireworks because that's way less pollutant, et cetera.
Yep.
That kind of stuff. I would say if there is there should be one announcement. But yes. I get worried that there will just all of a sudden be that extra rogue drone that then does get used for this.
Yeah.
But there are plenty of cameras. There's no, even without a drone, there was, there should have been every find of him being on the roof before anything occurred.
Okay.
That should have been caught.
Yeah.
There's just, otherwise, what are the cameras just sitting there as dummies? I don't know. I think there's way more that's not being released, and there's a lot going on.
Yeah, I'm curious if there is something, you know, there's things that there's cameras. Does UVU, are they sitting on it because they're afraid of embarrassment?
Yeah, right. I mean, what was going on? He was well known for his controversy and his, anti-college controversy. So if nothing else, I would think they'd be on it because they're intrigued how things are going to go, that everyone's eyes would have been on this event on campus. This wasn't just a quiet event. This is very well known, and he's had a history. So none of this makes any sense to me, for it to be a quiet, and there just seems to be a lot of cover-up because they're covering it up, trying to not put it public, but even all the in-betweens, I don't know if the gathering information, I can see one reason to not have everything public. That is if they know more and they're investigating things we don't even know about.
Yeah.
That's
or
the
if
only
there's,
reason.
Yeah. If there's, safety issues, if there is, if it was like a military trial and there's going to be, military secrets leaked out, I could see that.
There's something else going on. Yeah. Otherwise, if he did this all by himself, let's have it.
Yeah.
And if he didn't, then we need to have all that information as well. That needs to be exposed. And that needs to, accountability. There needs to be accountability.
Awesome.
This entire process. Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, thank you.
And thank you again. Thanks for calling. Great thoughts. She's got passionate about that, man. She's ready to go. Ann, you are not alone. You're not alone. A lot of people texting in today. Got texts coming in. Dumb question. Did he officially say he was not guilty? Yes. Cameras in the courtroom. Another texter, Lisa says, cameras should absolutely be allowed in. I agree with Erica that Charlie's death was televised and public. Also, we got, cameras in the courtroom, but I think he had help with the assassination. So we're going to find out about that. Another text that says, public trial is part of the Constitution. Cameras are today's way of making things public, so it should be all trials. I agree with you guys. I think it should be. I think there's... I have the feeling they're not going to allow it. We're going to find out here in the next little bit. You can keep it tuned to KDXU. We'll have you updated as we find out about it. But it would not surprise me if they said no cameras in, because I think judges go, gosh, if I've got all this spotlight, this is going to be a high profile case as it is, but little mistakes happen and it's even more magnified, right? I mean, hopefully the judge has enough confidence in themselves to be able to say, we are going to allow this. We want to, I have faith in myself, in my abilities. And we're going to have cameras in the courtroom. So we're going to find out, sometime mid morning this morning. Keep it tuned to KDXU. We'll keep you updated to it. And, a lot of other, emerging details that we'll see. This will probably be the main point made, but we'll see if there's other judgments that are included in this, coming up in this, this hearing today. Again, Tyler Robertson will not be in the studio or in studio, will not be in the courtroom for it. He'll just be tuned in and looking and listening in. So Tyler Robinson will not be in studio in the courtroom today for the hearing. So we won't see any of the images that we saw last time of him smiling, which I'm sure infuriated a ton of people. So we'll keep that updated for you. We'll keep it here for you. We're here for the people. Southern U Talk with me, Dale Desmond. Thank you guys for calling in, for texting in. A lot of folks and passionate about it. But we'll keep an eye on it for you, and we'll have all the latest throughout the day. Closing time. KDXU News Time is 9:59. This is Southern U Talk with me, Dale Desmond. Have a good day, guys.